In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hello, Ted.
Hey.
It is episode 101.
101.
I know, 101, man. We're past the 100 mark and we're moving right on with, well, I guess another year of Trailer Junkies podcast.
That's right.
So what do you say before we jump into anything else? We could talk about all kinds of nonsense like we often do, but let's get into beer because
okay,
I bought a beer. Oh my God, I think I need a corkscrew for this. I better go get one.
Uh-oh.
I just noticed that. I bought a beer about 6 weeks ago that's been sitting in the fridge. I have no idea what this thing is. But while I'm pondering what it is that I bought, I must have been drunk when I bought it or something. But while I'm pondering what I bought, let me go get a corkscrew because I just realized sitting here, not only do I need to pop the cap, but once I pop the cap, there's a cork in there.
Really?
Yeah, hang tight. I'll be right back.
All right, cool.
Okay. While I am working at this thing, what do you have tonight?
Okay. So as we said last week, I have the 12 Days of Beers from Audrey.
It's the 12 days. I don't know how this song goes.
And on Friday, since it's supposed to be a surprise to me, on Friday while I was at work, I told Anne, I said, oh, get the next two beers and put them in the fridge. She did that so I could have one for Friday night for the podcast or two.
Yeah, sure.
But after she did it, I was like, send me a picture of them. I want to see what they are. I don't care about the surprise.
Budweiser.
Exactly. It wasn't like that, but it was a Belgian that I was not crazy about. So I said, just open the next one. And she did. And this one was, it's called Smoky Lee. And it's a combination of, let me take my glasses over, a Belgian specialty beer and
okay,
Lapsang Souchong tea.
Where was it brewed?
It was brewed in, I don't know, Vilgende Pard Brewers, Belgium.
Oh, so it is in Belgium.
Yeah, it's a Belgian beer, but it's...
good. So it looks like it's in a Duvel kind of a glass.
It is. It is. It's this 11.16 fluid ounces. Definitely the Duvel, the dragon type of glass, but it has...
Yeah.
It has this woman, like she's smoking on it or something. No, she's just like, I don't know. Anyway, it's a smoky Belgian, so let me crack this here.
Wow, man. I'm like jealous. So with what I have, I told Clarissa, this is a big one tonight. So this is 1.9 pint, 9.4 fluid ounces. So it's almost like a wine.
You can see a whole wine bottle.
Big. Yeah, a whole wine bottle. So is it smoky?
It is smoky, yes.
Oh, we have the same glass tonight. Cool.
It's a smoky. It's so I'm used to smoky for whiskeys and stuff like that, but
is it like a smoky triple?
It feels like a triple, but it's only 8%. I don't know if that has any bearing in the triple, but
oh, I don't know. Yeah, the one I have. Oh, you got me by a point, tenth of a point. I'm 7.9.
Ah.
Okay, so this is the Petria, a spontaneous wild ale aged in oak barrels with Riesling grapes.
Oh, nice.
Dude, I have no idea why I even bought this.
Because you were drunk.
It was probably like $25 or something ridiculous. I don't know how much. I don't even know how much it was. But
see, that's usually why I don't end up buying those, because I see those all the time and I'm always interested.
Yeah. And then you get to the register and you're like, I'm committed.
Yeah.
Okay, so brewed and bottled by DeGard Brewing, Tillamook, Oregon.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, so located on the Oregon coast. Well, that I'm not going to...
Those are the cheese... That's the cheese city, Tillamook.
That's the cheese... Yeah, I've been to Tillamook cheesy things, and you get the squeaky cheese and the ice cream, and Tillamook is some good whatevers, but... Okay, let me open this sucker.
There you
I got
go.
The cap off, and I have the cork in, the corkscrew, so let me see what we got here. And if I... Okay, there we go.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
That's crazy they put a cap over a cork.
Well, it's either that or it's a cage, and the reason for that is because you could get, like, it could go rogue.
Pressurized, yeah.
And, like, with the carbonation and blow the cork right out, because the cork's not really attached to anything, it's just pressed in.
Right.
It's like a pressure fitting. So they put the cap on in place of what would otherwise be a cage. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the champagne type thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And let's see what we got here. Oh, wow. It's really light in color. And the bottle has a good feel. Very heavy, dude. Oh, it's got the... It has the Belgian-styled, like, really, like, sparkly kind of... This one's for Clarissa. Since it's so big.
You're not going to do that yourself?
Well, and we were at a birthday party all day, and I had, like, the... You know, you go... Like, man, I'll tell you. hang on. Oh, my God. It's like Riesling grape beer.
It's beer wine.
Yeah. It's like...
Is it good or is it not good?
It's very sweet.
Okay.
Yeah. Here you go, Clarice. Enjoy. Salute. Cheers. Let's toast her. Okay, go for it. Yeah, it's very sweet. Wow. It's tasty. I think my mother-in-law would like this one.
That's sweet. Wow.
One of those, like, it's, have you, Clarissa, what's the wine that your mom drinks? Moscato.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Moscato. Yeah, that's what it reminds me of. Like, well, Riesling is that kind of sweeter grape that's like a dessert grape almost,
yes,
you know, that
dessert,
old ladies like. I don't know. Maybe I'm an old lady tonight. Wow, this is like, this is ridiculous. Good. It's just really sweet. It's not something I would typically drink, so maybe it's a good thing I didn't know what I was getting myself into.
How does the hoppiness come through?
Wow, it's bottle conditioned. It's not hoppy.
Okay.
Yeah, not at all. I might keep the bottle. I don't know, for like...
Yeah, definitely.
Well, keep the bottle because when I homebrew and bottle, I like these heavy-duty, like, big bottles because 12-ounce bottles to bottle with, it's like you're just doing...
All day.
Yeah, all day long. It's like, I want, like, if I do a 5-gallon brew, I want, like, 5 1-gallon bottles. You know, boom, yeah. I'm done. Let's drink. You know, you just plow through your homebrew in like five sittings.
But you like it. It's just sweet.
Wow. Oh, my God. It's like a pucker sweet. Yeah, it's like a pucker bitter almost. Mm. Like bittersweet in a sense, like lemon. Kind of like lemon. Yeah, wow. Interesting. I don't know if I like it. I mean, I like it, but wow, I don't know. This is, yeah, it's not like IPA hoppy. It's like a, woo, man.
Well, let me give you...
It's like lemon.
Let me give you... You're going to be... I think you should really try this because you love Belgians, right?
Oh, I do.
So this is a Belgian on the front end. So as you take the beginning of the sip, it's Belgian. And then it smooths into this smokiness, which is very unique because I don't get it in beer as much. But the smokiness gives way to that dry tea, like an unsweetened tea.
Tea.
Okay. Like an oolong, and I guess this is a lap song. So this is like a serious like Asian tea.
Oh yeah, so it's like you go to some Asian restaurant and they give you that like that
free green tea at the beginning,
and it's like like it's really dry and it's
dry and hot and yeah, but this isn't hot, but that's exact same kind of dries you out on the back end and yeah.
Very cool.
So we'll figure out how to get you some of this.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. I might have to look. Oh, pardon me, man. These like little bubbly bubblies are getting me already.
Got the champagne bubbles in that champagne carbonation.
Yeah, that's what they're like. Those little like bubbly bubblies. All right. So what's new this week? Anything in particular? Anything exciting?
I'm watching a lot. I have a lot for after when we do what we're watching. As far as exciting, just a week of work. I went to Disneyland on Sunday last week.
Oh, Disneyland. There you go.
Yeah. You know, typical week.
How about... The what we're watching, because you shared an article with me.
Okay.
I mean, it was a brief article.
It was super short. I was like, I don't think I can make it through this article. And then it's one paragraph long. I was like, yeah,
you're like, here's an article that we should talk about. And I'm like, oh, geez, I'm in for it. Right. I open it up. I'm thinking I'm going to sit there for a half an hour. I open it up. I'm like, double space. You know, I was literally done with it in like 30 seconds. I'm like, wait, is this it's an article or a paragraph?
Yeah, I think it's so funny because Bloomberg is like, Bloomberg has me to the T because I was reading it and I was like, ah, perfect, it's over.
Let's keep that as a tease for later.
Okay.
We'll get to the article before we get to what we're watching, and I think that will lead us right into what we're watching then.
Okay, cool.
All right, cool. So, yeah, see, overall, though, you had a pretty mild week, not much to report.
Mild week, not much to report. That is correct. I'm trying to think. Yeah. Oh, I will say, I have one complaint about the week, so.
Oh, go for it.
And, of course, I do not represent anyone at Disney or anything about Disney, but I will say this one thing, it's on the cusp of whether it's not as negative or not. But I was interested in Bob Iger's new book. So Bob Iger wrote it's a memoir kind of, but it's kind of a business book. And I love book. I don't read books, so I listen to books on tape, but I love it when the author reads the book.
Can I stop you really quick?
You could stop me. Yes.
So Bob Iger wrote a book. Did he pen the book or did it go through like a ghostwriter or do you know that?
I mean, I don't know. I have no insider information, like I've said, but he is the author of the book.
Okay. Well, I mean, sometimes they'll even say for example, the Lance Armstrong book, you know, if you think about that, it was written by Peggy Jenkins or something.
Oh, okay.
Sally Jenkins, or I don't remember. Maybe that's what it was. But anyway, so like, he was like essentially the author, but she wrote the book in a sense.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So sometimes people like author books, but there's somebody who ghostwrites them and stuff. And sometimes they're forthcoming with that and sometimes they're not. And I was just wondering if he was or not.
This says by Robert Iger. So I, you know.
Okay.
No, that's fair enough. And who knows the level of editorial he has on it or whatever.
Right.
But it's called The Ride of a Lifetime, Lessons Learned for 15 Years as CEO of the Walt Disney Company. So interesting book. A lot of people around the company have read it. You know, it's of course you would read it, you know, if you want to get a little insight into this.
You're hoping your name's mentioned. For all the right reasons.
Or not named mentioned at all.
That's what I mean. For all the right reasons.
All the right reasons. So I'm like, all right, well, if Bob reads it, then I'll buy the book, buy the Kindle book, and I'll buy the audiobook. You know, so I'll listen to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because it'll also be cool to hear Bob's voice. I'll turn it up at work and people will hear Bob coming out of my office, you know.
And I agree with you. I think if it's an autobiography,
yeah,
then like, why would someone else read an autobiography?
Right.
Right? It's like me telling my story. Why would Ted read it? It doesn't make sense.
So
not that I wouldn't be honored, but.
Right, exactly. But so I go to the audio sample and I play the audio sample and it plays out and it's Bob reading his own book. And I'm like, this is great.
When was it released?
It's recent.
Okay, so it's a recent book. Okay.
Yeah, it's within this past year.
Sure.
So I bought it. You know, I heard his voice and I heard the story that they told. They talk about like the Pulse nightclub shooting and it happened at the same time that he was opening Shanghai, you know, and a whole bunch of stuff. And I was like, wow, this is riveting stuff for this this little tease, you know? So I bought the book, happy. I start listening to it. I'm in my office and the whole prologue is the same story again, but amazingly woven story about the launch, the week that he launched Shanghai.
And for those who may not know, just give a brief synopsis on Shanghai. Like, the 30-second overview.
So Shanghai was the largest undertaking in the Walt Disney Company since Walt Disney World was opened in Orlando. So never has more money and time and effort been spent on one single solitary project as when they built Disney World in Orlando. Because Disneyland here in California is the first, obviously, in Anaheim.
Right.
And then when he wanted to expand on his idea, there was no way to buy the surrounding area. So he went all the way across the country and made Walt Disney World. But yeah, he gives all the numbers for how big Shanghai is. And it's huge. And it's like...
And this is in China.
It's in China.
Right.
So then chapter one starts. It's somebody else.
Oh, someone else is reading it?
Somebody else reads it.
It's you know what, man? I that is a good complaint.
I was like, what are we doing? Like, I forked over my good Disney dollars. Like, I earned the money from Disney to give it back. But then I'm like, this is probably an Amazon thing. Bob probably had nothing to do with the clip that they selected to show to have people listen to. But anyway, it's still riveting. I got through the first chapter. It's an amazing.
And you're doing it all audio.
Doing all audio, yeah, 100%. Okay. Like driving to and from work, making.
That was my next question. When are you doing this? Like on the treadmill, like driving?
The treadmill I use, and I watch my Mr. Robot and finishing up High School Musical, the musical, the series.
Sure.
But yes, so the treadmill, I'm still watching stuff. But I also found that I'm getting back into podcasts. For the past 4 months or so, I've been only listening to fantasy football podcasts. And it really has taken a mental toll on me, like to be that invested in fantasy football that I listen to one daily podcast. So that's an hour every day. And then two other podcasts that came out two times a week. So that's 4 hours. So I was spending 11 hours a week on just football podcasts.
So as is typical, you read my notes. I don't know how you can see my screen, you know, but I wanted to ask you how you finished up on fantasy football this year.
So I was the number one seed going into the playoffs.
Okay.
And then I lost to the fourth place seed. And then I said, oh, that's okay. Because the second place guy, who's the commissioner, Peter, he's going to beat everybody. All roads lead to losing to Peter, right? And then Peter has like the second worst week of his year in the championship game. And I was like, everybody would have beat Peter this final week. And I was like, oh.
That's funny.
I ended up third overall. And
so did you get any money out of that? Or what do you get?
I forget whether I get money or not. I wasn't expecting any money. I think the first place gets the majority of the money and second place gets his money back for the whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I finished third. So it's like it's the of all the people who lost their money, I was the best.
There you go. You were like the first. Well, I wouldn't say the first loser, but you are the first loser who gets nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No bronze medal for me.
There you go. Yeah. So this week, I would say pretty easy week as far as like, you know, I mean, nothing exciting in the world of, you know, breaking anything around the house, like I said the week prior.
Right.
Yeah. I'm on a new app called Trainer Road. And Trainer Road is like this virtual cycling coach that gives you these work. Like you plug in all your information. I'm going to do these events on these dates and with this intensity and, you know, whatever. And it kind of like spits out these workouts for you, like year long plan. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of it is, are you going to do it indoors on an indoor trainer?
Right.
Or are you going to do it outdoors riding your bike? And then it uses like power meters and it, you know, it's pretty intricate, but like, let's say if you hired a coach, much like you were talking about, you know, you were going to get a coach for like running or something and you're like, I don't know if I can afford it or something. And yeah, I completely agree with you. Like I've looked at coaches and stuff and it's like, by the time the year's out, I've spent $5,000 on this coach or something, you know, or $4,000 or whatever it is. And you're just like, yeah, they're definitely going to get you to your end goal. And as long as you put in the work and everything, but man, is that a lot of money that I could put towards a million other things. But Trainer Road, like if you do it on a month by month, it's $20. If you do it, like if you buy a whole year subscription, it's like $15. And it comes out to like roughly 190 or something if you buy a whole year. I mean, 1 week of doing it and I'm doing, you know, I have the like the various tests that you do to figure out all of your numbers. And then they figure out like your workouts based on the numbers. And so after 1 week, I would say the mud is cleared and you could definitely see like the benefits of the things that they're putting in place, like why they say this is what we need to do and how the whole system kind of works. Mm-hmm. And I could definitely see vast improvement in all the flaws I've had in the past.
Really?
And I never knew it was so hard to go easy. More or less, you want to go really easy when you go easy, or you want to go really hard when you go hard, and you want to avoid all that middle nonsense. Huh. The middle is like junk time.
Useless. It's useless. It's a waste of time.
Well, the main thing is you're going too hard for any sort of recovery benefit, and you're going too easy for any sort of like physical gains, right? The middle, that is.
Right.
So when you go easy, go super easy, and when you go hard, go super hard, and that's like kind of polarized training and stuff, but not to get too wonky on it, but like the bottom line is for the $190 for the year, I figure, you know what, man? It's cheap enough. It's inexpensive enough.
That's inexpensive.
I could put the plan in place. I could work it. Even if 6 months down the road, I'm like, man, I'm not seeing the benefits or whatever, I could cancel it. And really, what am I out? Like $100 or something? You know, like it's not like, but you do that with a coach. You're like, what am I out? Like $2,500? Like that's like real money. You know, so
$2,500, but you only get to see the coach like 10 times in 3 months or something like that. Like,
exactly. Exactly. It's like every 3 weeks the guy meets with you or something, you know, and he lives in like Ogden, Utah.
Oh, my God.
You know, so you're doing everything like virtual. I mean, I'm just making that up. But, you know, like who knows where your coach is or whatever with half of this stuff. Right. But the point I'm getting at is it was a slow week, so I got to play around with this Trainer Road app and this Trainer Road stuff and, you know, figured that out, did a bunch of workouts. Well, not a bunch. I did 3 workouts with it so far. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the – and then we had a birthday party today that we went to for the boys. And it's funny, though. I mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago about it. And what's funny is – like different ethnicities kind of do things different, yet they do things kind of the same. And, you know, it was a Mexican family.
Yeah.
And we go, and I mean, they're just like, oh, more tacos. Oh, more beer. Oh, more like, I mean, more of everything, you know? And you're just like, you're like, no, Juan, I'm good, man. And he's like, no, come on, come on. Here, have more. And like, you know, 9 Pacificos and 2 Modelos and, you know, like 13 tacos later, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'm gonna explode.
Well, did they have a taco cart or a taco guy?
No, they just made him. No, he just made him.
He was doing it himself? Like, okay. Wow. Yeah.
Well, the grandpa did. The grandfather did.
Okay,
he
cool.
made like, you know, old Mexican guy making like, I mean, the best tacos you ever had. I mean, these things were like amazing, you know? And, but yeah, that's just how it is. It's like, it's so funny how like ethnicities are kind of the same in many regard. Like, it's just their food might be different, but like they're still just trying to like pile on as much as you could possibly eat.
Of course.
And when you're in explosion mode because you've eaten so much, you're like, no, come on, come on.
That's
you could
enough.
Do better than that.
That's enough.
You could do better. Yeah. All right, man. So what do you say we get to the future,
okay,
and not Michael J. Fox style?
All right.
The future on FX.
So what was your initial thoughts on this one? Because I have some stuff to say, but I'm interested.
My initial thought was FX on Hulu, but how does that play out if you have FX and cable? I mean, I'm assuming it's the same, I would guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a different packaging. I think it's an upsell for Hulu to say like, all right, now we have the library of FX, you know? Disney's done the deal.
Oh, I gotcha.
And then we're going to have all of the FX shows that you loved on Hulu now. I'm still interested in the windowing, whether the broadcast on FX is going to get a lead time and how much of a lead time they're going to have. So we'll see how much that is. But there's tons of stuff on FX that I've wanted to see that I haven't seen. So I'm kind of interested in it. When I watch this, so it's a sizzle reel. That's what they call these things because it's not a trailer. But when I watched this for the first time, I thought it was a new anthology series on FX. I thought it was called The Future and it was something that was going to air on FX on Hulu, because the FX on Hulu just looked kind of like an end tag, you know, where you kind of, their call to action, your CTA, where you're telling the people where to watch this. So I thought it was something that was specifically for FX on Hulu, some anthology series with Nick Offerman like in the leaves or something. And I was like, oh no, they're talking about their whole slate of all their stuff is here. And when it says the future, it just means the future for FX and Hulu together.
Oh, wait, this isn't a show? Oh, my God. The whole time I thought, oh, no wonder it was so weird. Like Vanity Fair and stuff. I'm like, how is this show going to work? Oh my God, is that hilarious. So yeah, it is a sizzle reel.
It's a sizzle reel for FX on Hulu, and Hulu's, and they're just producing this to get everyone that has Hulu excited about FX. If you're excited about
that's
FX,
too funny.
Yeah, if you're excited about FX and you don't have Hulu, then you should go get Hulu. You know what I mean? It's a sales pitch.
Oh, is that? Well, I was watching it, and I don't know necessarily the exact trailer, but it reminded me of, and maybe you can help me out here because I'm not sure.
It felt like Black Mirror, which one. like a Black Mirror-ish. Black Mirror, you know? It was like...
No, who did Us?
Universal? What do you mean?
No, the director. Who did Us?
Oh, the Twilight Zone. Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele. It reminds me of kind of like a Jordan Peele movie trailer where you're like the way they cut into it, the audio clip that they're using with the just more sounds in a sense than music.
Yeah.
And the fast edits and everything.
It's a lot packed in 1 minute. It's a lot of shows packed in 1 minute.
Oh, it's a ton. And I thought it was something like, I thought Jordan Peele was like somehow involved with some new show or something called The Future. And now you're telling me it's a sizzle reel. And then I rewatched it just now. And when they're showing Vanity Fair and all this stuff, I'm like, oh, now it makes sense.
And it says 40 plus original series, you know, like that's
right.
The giveaway
I totally did not pick up on that. So I don't know. Is it a fail on my part or their part? I mean, I don't know. I try to think I'm a smart guy, but maybe I'm not.
I mean, they're trying to do it. They could have kept something up in the bottom corner of the screen. You could have put a bug in the bottom of the corner of the screen and showed you the names of the shows as they were coming up.
I mean, maybe it's that the cuts and edits are way too fast that, like, you blink and you miss stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's, like, I looked away and I looked back and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'm still in this, you know?
Yeah, or they could have done something where you flash, like, Atlanta and you know, American Horror Story. You do some of the title cards of the shows.
Yeah,
because then you could see like which of the shows are, you know, like when we were launching Disney Movies Anywhere, there was a lot of the problem of saying like, oh, well, this is from that movie. And how are we going to say that these five movies, we had to do a lot of branding that was specific to the movie that was on the screen at the time. So we went above and beyond labeling most of the stuff. And I was like, but that's a quick clip of something else. And like, as long as we get every movie on it, you know, mentioned on that while it's coming up, then we're fine. You know, if we go back to that, back to The Incredibles, then we don't have to do it again. So that's something I could have done.
Let me ask this though. Does Anne like champagne?
Anne does like champagne.
And she does not like beer?
She does not like beer at all.
She would love this beer. Because the more I'm drinking it, the more I'm like, I feel like I'm just drinking champagne.
It's just champagne?
You taste the grape.
Right.
Well, obviously the bubbles and all that stuff, the way it's like very, the very fine bubbles. But I bet she would dig this beer.
Because it's like a Riesling champagne.
Yeah.
It's a sparkling Riesling.
A sparkling Riesling. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, she would probably dig this. Anyway, because I'm as I'm drinking it, I'm like, man, it's like I'm getting tired of it pretty quick because I'm not a champagne drinker. I don't really care for champagne. And this is like, it's more and more, every sip is more champagne, you know? All right, well, speaking of which, the future and effect. So do you have Hulu? You have Hulu?
I have Hulu. I got it through Sprint, so.
Oh, that's right. So what is Hulu a month, though? Do you know?
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, so you get it through like a phone
through a
purchase
package
deal.
Yeah, it's a package deal.
Yeah, okay. And do you use Hulu or sometimes?
It is the least of the streaming services that I use.
Okay, so and this
I often forget that I have it.
This might be a thing we can look up. I mean, somebody has had to, we shouldn't have to do the work, but somebody has had to have done the work, like, here's all the shows. And I'm not talking about, like, cross-platform. I mean, meaning, like, Netflix has Star Wars Solo, right?
Right.
I don't mean that, but, like, original shows only.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, HBO, you know, all the way down the line it goes, right? And all their series, which gets back into the article that we're teasing for later.
The three-line article. Yeah, go ahead.
But I mean, the point is, so there's, I mean, a ton of streaming service. Apple TV Plus, we're going to get into in a little bit.
Yep.
And you have all these and all these shows. Like, and then you have, like, I don't know, what do they cost? On average, $10 a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can only have so many services before you're, like, spending $500 a month. I mean, like, it would just get so outrageously expensive if you tried to cover your bases on all of these streaming services.
Yes.
So give the top five, maybe, of your hierarchy of what you feel gets you the best bang for your buck. And is Hulu in there?
Yes, I think Hulu is. Well, it would be bottom of the top five. But I would say Amazon Prime is probably one.
Oh, wow. See, I would have thought two.
Netflix is two.
Whoa.
And Disney Plus is three. And then after Disney Plus, I wish I had HBO, but I don't have HBO. But I think HBO would be four. Are we only doing the ones that I have? Okay, so HBO.
No. What you think is top five?
HBO would be four and Hulu would be five.
Okay. See, I would agree with the HBO and the Hulu.
Okay. What's your top three?
I would probably put Disney Plus at two.
Okay.
Amazon at three and Netflix at one.
Oh.
And the only reason for that is I think Disney has such a library, and to have access to everything whenever, like, that's so cool. Netflix, the only reason I put that at number one is because you never know what you're going to get, right?
Yeah.
Like, they have amazing stuff. Like, there's an incredible library on there, and then there's not. But you never know when there is and when there isn't.
Right.
But there's always something to watch.
But I think, to me, that quality gap is what put Netflix at two instead of Amazon at one. So Amazon as a streaming service, you know, it has some, and you said only original content, and that's kind of not exactly what I was doing, but.
Okay. You know what? I you're right about that. I screwed myself up by saying you never know what they're going to have.
Yeah.
And if I'm looking at their content only. Okay. So you're right about that. I would put probably HBO then a little bit higher.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at what content they own.
Okay, so if you're looking at non-licensed,
Disney has to be number one.
Okay. If it's only the stuff that you own, then Disney is number one.
Right. They have to be.
Then Disney is one and HBO's two.
Right.
And then Netflix is three, just because of the vast amount of quantity of.
They have a lot of stuff.
And a lot of it's good, you know?
Yeah, they have a lot of stuff.
And then it would be Amazon and Hulu.
Yeah, and you know what I've come to find from Amazon too, and I don't know how these things play out, but you take something like The Expanse, for example. We talked about that a year and a half ago or something. But so The Expanse was on Sci-Fi. They did like two, three episodes on Sci-Fi, whatever, and then all of a sudden Prime to watch The Expanse, and it's a Amazon Prime original.
Right.
Is it that they just figured, wow, this is pretty successful, we're doing okay with it, Sci-Fi doesn't have the money to put into it, so we're just going to buy it out
and do new seasons? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it'll make them money, and it's probably like they're already delivering it, so why not? And they can just own the rights to it, and they don't have to worry about deals, and I don't know. I mean, like, it's just, I found that, I've seen that in a lot of other shows on Amazon. They're like buying out things.
And Netflix does it too, to a point where, you know, they'll pick up new seasons and do new seasons of something. So it kind of keeps you in this space of, like, I don't even know how you would separate Arrested Development if they wanted to take the license away from Netflix, because Netflix produced two seasons of it, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how do you separate the production that is pre-Netflix owned and the two seasons that are in Netflix? So it's a very interesting licensing deal, and I think, to me, that whole licensing space is going to dry up so quickly over this next year or 2 years, because the Peacock is coming out, which is going to be Comcast and NBC's streaming service.
Oh, yeah, race to the bottom.
And then Warner Brothers is going to have their streaming service as well. So, yes, we're all
going to. Well, CBS already does.
Yeah, CBS does CBS All Access. And that's one that it's like there's definitely stuff on there, but I don't think that CBS would put enough content out there to keep me going. Like, I have to put on my calendar when Picard comes out. I think it comes out next month or something. But, you know, when it comes out, we should sign up at the end of it just to binge Picard in the second season of Discovery. So I was pretty regimented about getting rid of CBS All Access after the first season of Discovery went off. But the second season Discovery didn't kick me in to get this going again.
Yeah, lots of streaming, lots of shows. I mean, it's so much that, like, I don't know, how do you break into canning a streaming service that you've had for years, like a Netflix, for example?
Yeah.
And moving over to something like a CBS All Access or a Hulu, or like you said, I mean, the NBC Comcast and
right.
Or even Apple TV Plus. I mean, I just don't get it, but it's just, there's so much.
Well, I think we're in a great space where Pangolin is a real service and a real thing we could get into.
Yeah, I mean, but the biggest issue that I see, though, I mean, I agree with you. It's like, because you get lost where all these shows are, and Pangolin would help to aggregate, like, here's where you are, and you just want to watch the show, but you still have to subscribe to all these things. And at $10 a month on average,
right.
I mean, you're looking at, like, hundreds of dollars for maybe like a half dozen. You have to watch a lot of TV to subscribe to all this. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
What, you know what I mean?
I do. I know what you mean. But now that my kids are like 10 and 13, their TV watching has gone up significantly. And the fact that they now have devices where they can watch stuff a little more frequently and a little more self-directed, you know, like, we still get to say yay and nay on some things, but they watch a lot more content. And I think that's a thing that I would love to get a hold on, is to have the overarching understanding of what everybody's watching, you know, and how we're watching it, you know. Bryce wanted to put onto our Disney Plus account, he wanted to put another profile that's like the whole family. So when we're together, we click on a profile that has what we've been watching together as a group, rather than picking each one of us. And I was like, yeah, Bryce, that's what Pangolin's for. Don't scoop me with that.
Yeah, one of these days we might get back to that, man. But in the meantime, how about we talk about Free Guy?
Okay, cool. So, yeah, go ahead.
First question.
Uh-huh.
How on earth does this fit in with Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and The Lion King?
Well, I think
that's all I want to know.
It's a beautiful marketing tongue-in-cheek thing for 20th Century Fox to be able to play with the idea that now we're part of the mouse and we get to say that we're, we're in the same house of mouse as everyone else, as all these other guys. And, you know, and it does have the one movie that they didn't mention, because it probably hit too close to home, is Wreck-It Ralph. And this, it feels.
Oh, yeah, I got that feel.
It has
sure.
a vibe of the, especially the second one, Ralph Breaks the Internet, because it's, that has that racing game in it. And this is a lot like, you know, a Grand Theft Auto or something like that, or, you know, first person shooter.
Right.
Kind of those games. So I love it. I love the idea of it. And again, Ryan Reynolds is just like, this is his bread and butter, and, you know, he gets to be corny and goofy and action-packed in the end, you know, so.
Yeah, again, popcorn movie, like we talk.
Of course.
Yeah, I think it looks hilariously funny, and not just funny, but like very clever and witty. And there's going to be like tons of memes that come out of this, or maybe not that come out of it, but the memes are more like, It piggybacks on them as storytelling tools.
Right. It plays on the tropes of these new games, you know?
For sure, yeah.
And that was great.
Yeah, nice trailer cutting, you know? I could really appreciate how they cut the trailer together. It did well. Overall, Will I see it? I don't know about that. I mean,
not see it in the theater for sure, I don't think.
No, no, I would not see this in the theater, but I would say, yeah, this comes across Disney Plus. Oh yeah, I'll put it in the queue for sure.
And it's like, this is a 4th of July release. You know what I mean? It's July 3rd. This is, they're putting this in this power position.
It's like summer blockbuster kind of movie. And I think what's cool though is, you know, I always kind of make the joke about how, you know, like you got to blow up the world to save the world. And
yeah,
you know, explosion movies. And if you want to have a blockbuster, it's got to be an explosive experience, you know? And,
right, right.
And what I like about this and like Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet, when we get to it, mm-hmm. is that they are along the lines of that, like somewhat, but like what they are is kind of an explosion movie, but in, like you said, a tongue-in-cheek video game sense of the thing. So when they do blow up the world to save the world, it's a video game.
And they wink and nod at the audience and they say,
exactly,
you know that this is the trope of the genre. We know it's a trope of the genre, but we're going to play with it.
And they're not trying to make it like, you know, they're not trying to take themselves too serious.
Of course,
to say,
yeah.
Like, well, you know, in order to save the world, we have to, like, destroy everything, and then we don't care about, like, the aftermath.
Right.
That's left up for you to worry about, you know? And I don't think they... I think with this, they get into it in the sense that, hey, it's a video game. That's how video games operate.
Exactly. And is that a Glock in your pocket? No, it's two.
No, it's two of them. But with that, Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet is kind of right along the same lines of a video game theme.
Right. It's the other side of the video game space.
Exactly.
It's behind the computer screen, behind the codes, the code and the, what are those, the game generators, the you know. So it hit me like Silicon Valley for gamers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put
right?
it. I didn't think of it that way, but that's a good way to put it.
And like you said, this is an Apple TV Plus original, so it feels like, you know, they're kind of banking on they're pulling a Netflix where they took the creator of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is an FX title,
right?
Produced by Landgraf at his, you know, at his green light, you know, one of my favorite executives. And so then they take him out of that space and they give him a new idea, a new thing. And he's the star and creator of Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet, where he gets to play a self-indulged game creator with a team of coders and techies to make his stuff happen, you know? So I loved all the vignettes. I would love to see where this thing goes.
And I think you said it too. I mean, it's Silicon Valley from HBO, but in the gaming world.
Right.
Like, rather than trying to do compression so you can, like, share files better, or music, whatever, it's you're coding video games.
You're smashing watermelons to show what heads
exactly. I mean, they think they're... Yeah, what's his name? They think they're Gallagher. So we were talking about streaming services and which in the top five and everything, and neither of us mentioned Apple TV Plus. Do you get Apple TV Plus with your new phones?
So the new phone got me a year of Apple TV Plus.
Okay,
And I think it's just it slipped my mind.
So it's that good that you forgot about
right.
it.
In my use case, it would probably edge out Hulu because I actually do watch stuff on it. But yeah, there's only a handful of shows, and I think that's the problem that Netflix knew that they were going to hit up against, you know, and I think that's the
wait, Netflix or Apple?
I think Netflix knew that not having a lot of new content all the time was going to be an issue, and the fact
gotcha.
That there's
okay.
only like five or six shows on Apple TV Plus is kind of like I'm done watching, you know, Servant, and the morning show is over for the season. So what am I going to do with it now? You know, like
so they're trying to build their library essentially.
Yeah, but they're not spending the money the way that Netflix is, you know, because Netflix has multiple things coming out in a week or in a month, and they have a slate of, you know, a handful of half dozen shows, you know.
Right. But overall, Mythic Quest, so it's on Apple TV Plus. You have Apple TV Plus. Will you watch Apple TV or not? Yes. Will you watch the show?
I will watch the show. I will give it a shot. I will see how it goes. It is teased me into adding it to the list.
Okay, cool. I mean, I'd have to say I'm not a huge video gamer. I used to be. I probably haven't played video games in, who knows, like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, wow.
But if I play video games, like the video games I like are these kinds of video games, you know, like the Dungeons and Dragons kind of genre of, you know, like fantasy and magic and swordsmith and knights and armor and all the rest. Like, right? Like, I'm not a first person shooter video game guy. I'm more of like, let's go on a quest to go slay the dragon for its gold.
Yes. Mythic quest. Yeah. Perfect name.
Yeah. Exactly. Like Raven's Quest, even, or Raven's Banquet.
Raven's Banquet.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. But so if I had Apple TV Plus, I would probably watch it because, like, it's in my wheelhouse of the types of games I like to play.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, I don't usually play these kind of games because, you know, for whatever, kids, time.
Exactly.
Too much time on my bicycle. I don't know.
You can't have a controller in your hand while you're on the bike.
And finally, Lock and Key, fourth trailer for tonight.
Yes.
So we had a bit of a back and forth with this one for the end of the trailer.
Right.
So you were wondering what it was. It's kind of like a whispery, I don't know, like...
It's awful, whatever it is. It's just...
You couldn't hear what it was, and I thought, well, let's play this thing backwards, and let's see, because it sounded very backwards.
Yeah, it sounded backmasking. It definitely had that vibe to
it. Yeah, so I reversed it. And we played it. I'll drop the reversal into the episode this week.
Yeah.
And so I reversed it and we listened. And you said you listened like 10 times.
10 times in a row. Out.
Yeah.
Just thinking like, if I let's keep listening to it, maybe the words will pop out. But it was like gibberish, front and back.
It did tell me what it was. Somehow I heard that her feet were scared. I don't know what it was. You know what I think it is? I think it's like show specific gibberish about like they're conducting a spell or something. Mm. Because the lock and key is kind of magical and
very magical, very mystical.
Yeah. And I think it was like, you know, we're going to conduct a spell. And this is the gibberish spell conjuring that we're going to do for, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I listened over and over. I would say they definitely turned it backwards. Mm-hmm. So when I reversed it and we put it forwards, yeah, I think that made sense to do that, but it still doesn't make sense, period.
Yeah. Regardless of that, I'm still excited about this series.
Have you ever heard of this graphic novel?
I've not heard of the graphic novel. Again, this is another trailer that was brought to us by Audrey. So she's keeping her finger on the pulse of all things teen. So I think this is a good teen spaced play for Netflix. You know, they have aged up the series of unfortunate events. And I think this is along those lines. So I think teens would love this.
So I did a little bit of research after I watched the trailer. Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's a pretty good following for this graphic novel. And there's like a decent fan base. I have never heard of it.
Right?
Is it because like I'm too old or I mean like...
You're too old and your kids are too young.
Is that what it is? I mean...
I think so.
So this is like what? Like first year college kind of crowd or something?
I don't think. No, I think it's like teenagers.
Oh, okay.
So my kids are not.
Man, it's for teenagers. It's kind of like.
It looks dark.
Yeah, I'll say it's like kind of demonic and like the kind of things that'll give me like weird dreams.
Yeah, it looks a little dark in its portrayal, but I think it is meant for teens. And it's in that teen space. I think it's in that teen space where it's
kind of like Twilight and stuff.
Yeah, where they want to feel like they're pushing the envelope, but they're not really. There's nothing too dangerous about it, you know? in the end, you know?
Is the house the psycho house from Universal's backlot?
I don't think so, but it does look like a creepy house for sure.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, I felt like I was on, like, the Universal tram, you know, cruising through the back lot of Universal and like, wait a minute, I've seen that house before.
Yeah. I think, you know, Netflix had success with Stranger Things. And I think Stranger Things reached down into middle school. And there's a lot of things in Stranger Things that felt like it was way too grown up for middle school.
Yeah.
So the fact...
Well, I know a lot of old people that watch Stranger Things, like in their 70s and stuff.
Right, right. But I'm saying, like, if you wanted to kind of expand into, you know, into middle school and kind of be a little safer about it, maybe this kind of rides that line.
Yeah, I don't know. You're gonna watch, I mean, I'm sure with like Audrey and Bryce, you're gonna watch this? Or
so Audrey's gonna watch it. I don't think Bryce is into this. It's a little too scary for him, and he's self-aware. He knows the things that he doesn't want. He doesn't want anything to do of that stuff. So yeah, like even at Doctor,
yeah, he's like my boys. Like they just know, like, nope, this ain't for me.
We watched Doctor Strange and tonight at over dinner. And he was covering his face over some of the surgery stuff. And I was like, all right, we'll tell you when it's over, you know. But, you know, as long as you know yourself and you know what you want to see and not want to see, then you're okay, you know.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm going to watch this. Like you said, I mean, I don't think I'm the audience.
No.
And, you know, I'll be honest with you, like, I'm not joking when I say it just makes for weird dreams. I just don't need those weird dreams, you know? Like, I just have like, sometimes things just lead down that path, and yeah. I just don't need to go down that path, you know?
Right, right, right.
So, this article we've been teasing.
Okay.
Pretty much Bloomberg. Hollywood made 532 TV shows in 2019, and it's going to make more. So the quick and dirty is from the one paragraph article, which was really short,
right,
is that, you know, Hollywood is like banking on serial television, and they're dumping a ton of money into making amazing content series.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's, you know, and it's probably a good reason why we talk about so many TV series on Trailer Junkies podcast.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think going into this endeavor, we thought we were going to do movies, and then we realized, like, there's just, you can't ignore the TV space.
Yeah.
There's just too much.
And the quality of that, and since we're kind of talking about what we're watching, that Barry, you saw the whole second season of Barry, right? You saw both seasons?
I did, yeah, I saw both seasons.
So that, when she's sitting at in front of the showrunner, and the showrunner says, I want to make TV, but not TV, if you know what I mean. Do you remember that line? It was like this weird joke. And I was like, I know exactly what he means. He wants to do like movie style, you know, mini series, bigger stories, but then cut them up into serialized television, you know, and we just call it, you know, series or television series, but they're all streaming, you know, and they're all in this space, and they can be, you know, delivered in one in like a handful of ways, but it is a series. It is a serial kind of endeavor.
Well, and here's an interesting thing, because Netflix, and I don't remember the show, but Netflix did something where like they went from one episode to the other with like a really interesting cut, rather than just ending and then next, all those
champagne bubbles.
And rather than just ending and then saying, like, you know, next episode, like 7 seconds. Like, they had this really cool, like, I don't know, transition from one episode to the next that was almost seamless, the way like a book was turning or something. Do you remember the show? I don't.
I think it was that it was like The Good Cop or something.
Yeah, I can't remember. But
at the end of The Good Cop, they would do a transition where the mystery that was solved and the one became a newspaper article. And then,
yes, okay, then maybe that was it.
And then it goes into, and then it backs out into the newspaper, and then the next episode was another story in the newspaper that they zoomed into that story.
Okay, maybe that's what it was. But like, I think we need to see more of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You could stop it if you want, or you don't have to, but I think you need more seamless transitions rather than the abrupt, this is over, the next one starts.
Right.
And then you could take something like, you know, Lord of the Rings director's cut that's 4 hours for each movie. And if you think about it, though, I mean, you're looking at like 12, 13, I don't know how long exactly if you added it all up, but 12 to 14 hours, let's say, of the director's cut, if you look at all of the time, and you can make like, you know, if you go by a 45-minute series or something, I mean, you could put in 20 episodes.
Right.
And if you make it seamless, you, like, there is a transition, let's say, but it's like, okay, I could go to bed after this before they get to the next, like, story arc.
Right.
Where, like, movies are movies, in other words. And I think for to say that Hollywood made all of these, you know, 532 TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, TV shows, like, so if you count episodes, you're looking at, you know, 532 times what, 10?
10 at the minimum, right? It's like...
On average?
I think on average, it might be even more because the...
Well, there's some that have 8.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but some have 20.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think 10 is... 10. I think 10 is a safe average. So if that's 5,000 shows, 5,000 episodes.
5,000... Okay, so you're probably talking 6,000 episodes.
There you go, 6,000.
You know... What, average 42 minutes? Like, who has that kind of time?
And I think that's why, you know, in this article, John Landgraf is talking about how it's bananas, you know, and like, and this seemed to say that he doesn't appreciate it. Like, we've gone beyond peak television and peak streaming, and it's just too much to offer.
It's too much to offer. It's shocking there's enough money to give to everybody. It's shocking that on many of these shows, the acting is good.
Mm-hmm.
However, which shows am I missing where the acting is just like god awful, you know? And maybe there's like, I don't know, like there's some of these like low budget networks that, you know, and maybe they're counting all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then like, where do you draw the line? Like, okay, so Hollywood made that, but is that from a major studio or is that like people putting like shit on YouTube? You know, like where's the line to say like this is what Hollywood does? Like,
yeah.
Define Hollywood.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think and that line grays every time, you know, Apple TV Plus makes a series. You know, they're getting Hollywood people, but they're, you know, I don't know that their presence here in LA, you know, does that matter, you know?
And isn't like one of the number one places to film these days is like what?
Atlanta.
Isn't it like Atlanta, Georgia?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, if you think about, or Vancouver, or Toronto, or,
yeah,
you know, wherever they're filming and making this stuff, I mean, define Hollywood, too. I mean,
exactly.
Like Hollywood,
yeah,
is, yeah, it's, so I don't know how they come up with these numbers, but the bottom line is, I think there's too many shows, too many streaming, and how many, I mean, eyeballs on the screen. You know, like we subscribe to Prime, Netflix, and Disney, and we did do HBO, but then once Disney came, there was so much content there that, like, I couldn't justify a fourth. And I'm sure if you didn't get stuff free through your phone deal,
yeah,
you wouldn't have all that you have. I mean, it's just in the end, like, I'm in a wash of streaming series and shows and movies, like I could never watch what I already have.
Right.
I don't know, man. It just seems to be just like, it just seems to be too much. I agree.
It's way too much. And I love how the article kind of closes out on the thought that it has the top 10 list of shows for the past decade. And the quality of shows is what really, like 18% of it was HBO releases.
Right.
And then,
right.
Or 19% is HBO, then 18% is FX, and then all the way down at number 5 is Netflix with 10%. So it is, you know, I think when you talk about the quality of shows, I think that's why something like FX on Hulu is such a big deal, because it's like just one percentage off of the past decade's quality shows off of HBO.
Right.
So that's got to be a huge draw for a lot of people, a lot of fans of the Americans out there, or Atlanta, and it's such a wide gamut.
Oh, I enjoyed the Americans.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you know, I think you're drawing people into streaming services. And as far as what we talked about earlier, when you say it's a licensing deal, there's no real licensing deal there. It's a branding issue where FX on Hulu, because Hulu and FX are both owned by Disney, they're, you know, it's it's not a license that Disney would ever lose over negotiations. You know, we're not going to go dark. And if you ever want to see the Americans on Hulu again, you have to write to Hulu or tell Hulu you'll cancel them if they don't carry it. You know,
right?
This is quite an alignment of things with Peacock coming out, and now I'm looking at the article. It says AT&T's HBO Max. So I don't know if HBO Max means the maximum amount of HBO or HBO and Cinemax, you know, because those have always been brother and sister cable companies.
Well, if you see a lot of nudity, then you know it's Skinemax. If you don't see a lot of nudity, then you know it might be like the maximum HBO. I don't know. So with all of that, we've been watching more Jeff Goldblum.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so we did the sneakers, the ice cream.
Tattooing?
I don't know. We've been watching Jeff Goldblum. We finished Jack Ryan.
Okay.
More Star Wars, Clone Wars. So the one thing about that one is I think we're almost done with the first season. There's like 24 episodes. Why do I need 6 seasons of this?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Hey, do the boys like it?
Oh, you know what, man? We're into it. We're all on the sofa. We're all under the blankets. We're all snuggly. We're all like cuddly. I mean, it's good family time. I can't complain.
Is it still motivating them to finish dinner quickly?
Oh, it motivates them for everything. And here's the funny thing. I'll be like, all right, go brush teeth. And they'd look at me. They go, or what? No Clone Wars?
They know.
They know. I'm just like, that's right.
I'm playing with your addictions already.
And then they like run in the bathroom and brush their teeth really quick. But yeah, so, and then I was looking on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of cool stuff that you would never even know is there. So unless you were looking for it.
Right.
And I just type in like bicycle stuff just to see what the hell's there. I do that on Netflix too and everything. And Netflix has a little bit of stuff, but Amazon has like, I don't know, 30 maybe different documentaries of all kinds of stuff. And there's this one, there's this one ride I've been wanting to do called the Belgian Waffle Ride. And it takes place in northern Santa Barbara County.
Oh, wow.
So it's right here. Yeah. It's 140 miles on like road, dirt, gravel, single track. And you do it all on a road bike. I mean, it's like this insane ride.
Wow.
And so there's this race in northern France called Paris-Roubaix, which is pretty famous in the cycling world. It's a one-day classic in April. Mm-hmm. And they call it the Hell of the North because it's like always raining and muddy and over cobblestones and all this, you know. And
yeah.
Anyway, so the name of this movie, which was a 40-minute doc, it was short. It was like a 40-45-minute documentary on the Belgian Waffle Ride. And it was pretty much the Hell of the North and then in parentheses, County. So it was like a play on the Hell of the North, uh-huh. You know, and then so we watched that and I told Clarissa, I said, I can't do it this year, but that's on my list for like 2021.
Would you ever go international? Would you do international?
Oh, hell yeah.
So you do that French one?
Oh, no, that's a pro race. Oh, okay. I can't get into that. Yeah, no, there's what's the one Paris-Brest-Paris, which is an amateur event that goes from Paris to Brest to Paris. And I think it's like 600 miles or something, you know, but it's done over like a number of days and it's mm-hmm. all self-supported. They're called like brevets. And what those are, they're like these long, drawn out, self-supported, all day events that go on for multiple days. And then like if you finish in a certain time, you can qualify for Paris-Brest-Paris. And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's like one of the top like races. Amateur, of course, but it's like one of the top in the world for like, you know, that kind of an event. But I would totally do that. Yeah. I mean, I'm up for anything on the bike. But then that led to a Sunday in Hell. And a Sunday in Hell is a 1976 documentary.
Wow.
About the Paris Roubaix bicycle race, which I've known about for like ever. I mean, everybody who's into bicycle racing knows of the Hell of the North.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it in like 2 decades, you know? So I thought, you know what? I'm going to put it on. So I put it on and Clarissa's sitting there. And I mean, it's like 1976 style, you know, like it's kind of that muddy color, you know, and I mean, it's
it's prime for a mockumentary.
Oh, dude. Oh my God. It is totally into it. Yeah. If you watch, like, just go to YouTube, type in A Sunday in Hell, fast forward like 37 minutes and just watch for like five, and you're like, okay, I get the gist. Like, there's this one scene in there where there's this labor dispute, so all these union people come out and they like stop the race, and they're like throwing newspapers because they're like newspaper people who like get laid off, and they're like throwing newspapers at the riders and stuff.
Oh, no.
And then the riders are trying to get through the mess. But then, like, all these newspaper people see, like, their favorite rider, and they're, like, cheering that guy on, but they're throwing newspapers at, like, all the other guys.
Ones, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, it, like, a total mockumentary, though. You're so right. But, yeah, so that was one of those ones that, like, I knew about, and I saw, like, 20, 25 years ago, and I thought, you know, let me watch this thing, you know, because the Hell of the North County, like, made me think of it, because I haven't thought of it in 25 years, you know, but it was so good. But yeah, like I said, I mean, Jeff Goldblum, Jack Ryan, Clone Wars. So we just finished up like three of these 532 TV series.
That's awesome. only 500 and only whatever to go.
28 more to go. Or 29, whatever the hell. I can't even do math. But. So what have you been watching?
All right. So for the television, thank you to Audrey for being in SAG. We got to see the Barry season 2, which I loved.
Oh, very cool.
And then Anne watched Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
And I started to watch one of the early episodes, but I wasn't into it, so I told her she could watch it without me. But then...
Of Chernobyl?
And yeah, Chernobyl. And then the last episode, I watched it with her, the last episode and a half, and they were pretty good. Like, I might go...
Oh, it was fantastic.
I might go back and watch the other ones. I don't know.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, I think some of what I really enjoyed... I mean, it was... Like, how would you put it? Like, it's not a docu-series. I mean, it is.
It's a mini-series.
There is artistic license, of course.
Right. But Anne was very, very, like, she was very into, like, the fact-finding. And she said it was very close to the real deal.
Oh, it was, yeah. And I remember being a freshman in high school when all that went down. And we were sitting in an English class when we first learned about it. Because it came over the airwaves and they brought in a TV for us to watch, right? And all of a sudden we're like, you know, by the time we learned about it, like, it's already been like all the radiation cloud has already circled the globe.
Wow.
And I remember we're sitting in English class like, wait a minute, so right now, like, this radiation cloud is above us? Like, we were freaking out, you know. So imagine how people like in Finland and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Though. Anne was saying that the Swedish community, there's like they.
Exactly.
They saw it like happen when it happened real time. And
they did.
And
they were like they
doing that. So, yeah, she fact checked it as she was watching all the stuff. And at the end, they do that great thing where they have tons of footage of the guy who basically like called them all out on being cheap, you know?
Right. Yeah. And what I love, though, are the miners.
Yeah.
Did you didn't see the miners?
No, I didn't see the miners.
Okay. I'll leave that one to your imagination. But pretty much it was so hot when they were trying to dig, and, you know, they wanted to do this stuff underneath it and stuff. So they couldn't get under there. So they go and they get the miners, and the miners were like, all right, we'll help you out and everything. And it was so hot where they were working, like 100+ degrees, whatever, and they were asking for like whatever supports.
Yeah.
And the Soviet government did not give them any supports, like for cooling.
Yeah.
So they were like, all right, well, we'll cool ourselves. So they dug these holes and everything completely nude. So, you know, and the funny thing is, or like the way they show it at HBO, you know, because HBO could do this stuff.
Right.
They show these guys working down in the hole and digging and stuff, and like their cool yuns flopping around. And it was just like, okay, really? I got to watch like fat guys digging, you know?
No thanks.
But yeah, no, Chernobyl was great, man.
And then I watched the first episode of Watchmen, which is another HBO series, and it's kind of quirky. If it wasn't made by all the people that
have
made,
not seen it.
Yeah, if it wasn't made by all the people that made Lost, I would say I wouldn't keep watching it. But all the people that made Lost and my boss's boss both endorsed this show, so I guess I'm going to give it another shot. And I've continued to watch Mr. Robot on the treadmill. And then for movies this week, I watched Jojo Rabbit Today, which was extremely quirky, extremely sad, much sadder than I thought it was going to be for the type of movie. I knew it was going to, you know, push the envelope, but it did more than push the envelope. It was like, it was an amazing shock to the system. And then I also saw Joker, which I didn't.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like Joker, I think the hype was too much for me. It was a really good movie. I can see why people were so hyped for it, but I was so hyped. There was so much hype for me going into it that, I don't know, it fell slightly short of expectations.
Yeah, and then I forgot to mention that we watched The Great Hack while we were doing the indoor trainer.
Where's that? What's that?
That was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. What we wanted to do was we wanted to watch more Jeff Goldblum. So I have a 2007 MacBook Pro. I mean, what's that now? Like 13 years yeah. old or something? I'll tell you, man, one reason why I love Apple computers is because if that was like a Dell from back that at, in 2007, that thing would have been in the trash by 2010. That Mac is still rock solid. It still does everything I needed to do. But for one thing,
the OS,
I found it's, well, okay, I can't get past, I think it's El Cap or something, but uh-huh. but no, I mean, it's the first chink in its armor. Mm-hmm. It won't run Disney Plus. Oh. Disney Plus, it must just be too heavy on, I don't know, like the resolution or something, and it just won't run Disney Plus. It can't keep up, you know? So like it pauses and freezes and glitches and everything.
Right.
Where it will still run Amazon, no problem, and still run, you know what? I just thought it, Netflix, I was going to say, but you know what I think it is?
What's that?
It's a 720 display. Mm-hmm. And anytime you try and run 1080, it won't run 1080. It like glitches and stops and pauses. And I do know that Amazon and Netflix will run at 720. And I wonder if, and I'm just speculating, but I wonder if Disney Plus is 1080p only.
Yeah, that might be.
And because of that, it's not keeping up with the 1080.
Huh.
That might be because of the display. But anyway, The Great Hack, pretty much it's about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and the Clinton Trump election and campaigns, and you know, it's all about that stuff and the players that are behind it and at the center of it and everything. So very interesting. As you're watching it, like I'm sitting there on Trainer Road, which is an app, and I'm using Garmin, which is an app, and I have the Fitbit and all the, I'm like, okay, so Big Brother knows my heart rate right now. They know my cadence. They know how fit I am. They're going to pass this along to my insurance company. Like, I'm just thinking, like,
I'm
giving away all of my data. I'm giving away all of my, like, neurologic, cardiac, you know, data to the internet.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, okay, I don't have to do any of that, but then I don't have to have that, you know, that service, I guess. But then at the same time, you're like,
how do you know if you're getting better if you don't if you don't track that stuff?
Well, and that's just it, you know. And then you trust these companies to like not share your data and stuff, and I don't know, man. It's like, it's just so, I think we're at the point the lines are so blurred that it's like, you know, that ship sailed, you know? I don't even know what to think of it anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, it's over, you know? It's like, if I avoid the obvious, right? Like, which Happy Days right. character are you, you know? Like, okay, I'm not going to take the quiz to find out I'm Potsy. It's like, okay, when you start doing that stuff, yeah, they're collecting a lot of data. I don't know. You just hope that something like a coaching software isn't roping you into marathon coaching to sell your data to Amazon so they can then advertise shoes.
Shoes to you, yeah, running shoes and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's just disingenuous, you know, unethical in my opinion, but man, they all do it.
Yeah. All right.
All right, man.
Cool.
What do you say? Yeah, I had a good night. I had a good night.
Let's call it a week. This Smoky Lee ended really nicely. You know, that crisp tea dry finish.
Yeah.
is a great way to finish a beer. Like, it, you know, it's super crisp all the way through.
Dude, I want to try one of those things. Yeah. It sounds so good. Yeah, I would say mine, the more I drank it, the more it finished like a glass of champagne. Mm-hmm. It was tasty. It was just like champagne-y, you know? Like, I think Anne, who...
Not your cup of beer.
No, not my glass of beer. I think Anne, who is not a beer drinker, I think she could definitely... Her and Barbara would be all over this beer. Yes.
Cool.
All right, man. Well, hey, I'm glad that beer was good for you. And you know, I want to see if I can find one of those. Send me a photo of it. I'm going to see what I can come up with.
Awesome.
It sounds like really good.
We'll get this for you. We'll figure it out. All right. Have a good night.
All right, Ted. Hey, you have a good night.
See ya.
Yeah. Later, man.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.